Welcome to In Season. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff, and we are exploring the farms and gardens of the Lower Columbia Pacific. And today I have my dear friend and fellow master gardener, Jane Donnelly, with me. Hi, Jane.
Good morning.
And we're also going to suck Ms. Kate Brister, our engineer, into. We're not letting her turn her mic off because she's also a master gardener. And we want to talk a little bit about fall going into winter, and the things you need to be doing right now to get your gardens and your farms ready for the oncoming season. We just went through a bit of a storm warning. There were some high winds that we had around here. Some communities suffered more than others. I really want to extend my heartfelt thoughts to the community of Manzanita that really, really suffered a tornado going through there. It tore up a lot of businesses and homes and did a lot of damage. And it's a good reminder to all of us, even though the monster storm maybe did not pan out as it was predicted for the rest of the North Coast area, that these kind of storms happen, and you definitely need to be prepared. And Jane, you actually did suffer a little damage in your garden from the storms. Was it Thursday or Friday?
Thursday night. We were sitting there having dinner. There wasn't a breath of air out. We were saying, wow, I thought it was supposed to start here pretty soon. And all of a sudden, we had three huge gusts of wind, and the tree in the front of our house just went boop and fell right over.
Did it hit your house or did it?
No. The sweet tree that I love dearly missed both my rhododendrons and missed where we usually park the car, but we actually had put the car in the basement. So
wow.
It didn't hit anything.
But it's gone.
But it's gone.
And how old was the tree?
About 15 years.
Wow.
Jane, did the wind snap it or did it seem to pull it? Had it been a weak root base or what? Would you know why it took it?
Well, Luke came out from Arbor Care the next day and actually cut it all up because we were really afraid that on Saturday it would pick up and make a mess of our neighborhood, take out anybody's cars or something. So he came out and he just said that it was the wrong place for that kind of tree. And it's
shame
my
on you,
fault.
Jane.
I'm raising my hand. I did it. I was the one who chose the tree, and I've known for years that it was an inappropriate tree for that spot.
Well, gee, Jane, talk about the tree and the spot.
I'm curious now. So why was it the wrong tree for that location? Because I think this is a good thing for people to think about. And what I really want people to encourage people right now to do is to take a walk through your garden, take a walk around your property, and look at what's there, look at what's growing, and try and see, you know, if we did get hit by another big wind. And clearly it doesn't take that much of a big wind.
Thursdays were the worst winds we had.
But a lot of damage can happen. Tree limbs can fall if they're close to your house, if they're close to a fence or where you park your car. There's damage that can happen. So be thinking about that. So
in my defense.
No, well, yes, but also tell us why. Why was this the wrong tree for the wrong place?
Well, number one, we chose it before I'd taken the Master Gardener class.
Okay.
Before the storm of 07.
Okay.
So there were things about the house and trees that I just didn't know at that point.
Okay.
In 07, we watched the glass in the front of our house, our big plate glass window, flex with the wind.
Yeah.
So that on the house is probably our weakest point.
And you're starting up on a hillside. You're on 17th in Astoria,
yep.
So it's going up the hill.
Up the hill.
Kind of towards Clatsop Community College.
Yes. But the winds come down the hill. So our winds, we tend to get more side to side than straight on.
Okay.
So we should never have planted a tree in front of that window so close. And we picked a flowering plum because I wanted something that would bloom in spring.
Which is a good thing.
Which is a fabulous thing. And it was a fabulous tree. But they get to be 40 feet tall.
Yeah, they do.
Which is totally inappropriate. So once I had heard Luke speak.
How close to your house was it?
Probably 6 feet.
Away from your house?
Away from the house.
A 40-foot tree.
A 40-foot tree, which we never allowed to get to be 40 feet.
So you kept it pruned.
Every fall, my poor husband would lean out the second story windows and trim the tree down so nothing rubbed against the house.
Okay.
And just to remove weight from the top of the tree.
But you were always having to fight with it.
Always. It's that thing. Uh-huh. Do you really want to put that much maintenance into something, into your garden? It's one of those choices you have to make.
Yeah, yeah.
And for a few years we were, and we were really lucky because we did realize we had storms of this type at least four times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if we kept it pruned way down, we were in good shape. Mm-hmm. But it's been a crazy year.
Yeah.
We hadn't got the pruning done, and all the leaves were still on it. So it's really heavy.
Oh.
So had it been a couple of weeks down the road, we probably would have had it all pruned back. We would have had no trouble.
Yeah.
So
but
that's
some
my
years are
going
to happen like that. I mean, you're not always going to be able to do the maintenance. Trees are going to get big. Things are going to happen.
Yep.
I know we've got a plum tree, an old flowering plum tree on our farm that's right next to our very extensive elk fencing. And I'm just expecting, you know, each year for massive limbs to fall off and smash into the fence and then wake up in the morning and have, you know, deer having a huge party inside of our produce farm.
Yeah.
So it's something that I think about, like, yeah, I've really got to get that taken care of. And you put it off and you put it off until the storm makes a decision for you. So those are really good things this time of year to be walking around, thinking about things. Also looking at, because we've been getting a lot of heavy rainfall too, and thinking about erosion in your garden. You know, do you have bare soil? Are you on a hillside? Are there places where your soil might be washing away? Are there hillsides that maybe you need to stabilize a little bit? You know, are there shrubs that you could plant that would help, you know, hillsides be more stable, help hold soil in place? Jane, you were telling me earlier about a plant guide.
Oh, it's one of my favorites. It's that they have numerous varieties depending on what you're looking for. And it's called Great Plant Picks for the Maritime Northwest Garden. You can get them online, so it's Great Plant Picks Maritime Northwest Garden, and they've got all different varieties. So I've been looking at trees. So you can look at trees and shrubs, and they give you a huge list depending on what you want it to look like. We prefer a red tree in front of our house, so my head was going for maples. So now we're going to have to think of one that doesn't get much taller than, like, 15, 20 feet. It'll tell you what its needs are or what you need to do. So these are absolutely great guides. And I've only looked at it for a home garden guide.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I know that they just put one out for bees.
Oh, so for planting plants for pollinators.
Right.
Oh, wonderful.
And
that's
ones
really
that
good.
Are absolutely. And they keep it up to date. So if new varieties have come out, they might say, take a look at these. These are really cool, and this is what it'll bring for
you. And a guide like that can really help people in our region make decisions, because a lot of times you're looking at garden books or you're looking at, you know, even like national magazines. A lot of times those are written for other regions. A lot of times it's the Northeast or the Midwest. A lot of those guides.
The Willamette Valley.
Exactly. Yeah, and even the Willamette Valley. And so thinking about where we are and what's appropriate for planting here, you definitely, there's some considerations that need to come into effect. And even thinking about, can this plant, if you are in a very windy spot, if you live right next to the ocean, if you get a lot of weather, or, you know, even living right next to the ocean, do you get a lot of salt water?
Yeah.
You know, what are plants, what are shrubs that can withstand that? And sometimes we come to our homes, to our gardens with a preconceived idea of, I want to have these plants in my garden. And you plant them whether or not they're actually going to do well there, or whether or not, you know, it's going to be successful, or it might cause damage or fall, you know, destroy your home.
Or the deer will live in your backyard and eat everything you plant.
Absolutely. So, I mean, sometimes it's kind of reconciling with, you know, this is where I am. This is the garden that I have. This is the space that I have to grow in. And these are the plants that would want to live here.
Yeah.
And learn to love those plants rather than insisting on the plant that you love that, you know, the deer also love, or the elk also love.
Well, Teresa, you had made that point in a master class. When I was taking my master gardening classes, you had taught one of the sessions, and you actually used the term plant porn, plant picture porn, Packy's plant picture porn.
It's
to
terrible.
Try to teach us to not look at the pictures, to not look at what we think we love or might want to do or this or that, but to really start first with, who are we? What is our place?
Yeah. Well, and then thinking too about, how much maintenance do you want to do? How much work do you want to put into your garden? You know, it's one thing that I'm thinking a lot about right now, because certainly for farmers like myself, you know, there's a lot of things that we have to do this time of year that are in preparation for the next growing season. And because this is your business, this is your job, you've got to do this stuff. If you want to have an effective growing season next year, you know, you need to clear your beds, you need to plant cover crop, you need to mulch your soil, you need to plant your garlic, you need to put out lime. There's a lot of things. that you really need to do to set yourself up for the coming season. Home gardeners, you know, if you could go either way, you could do those things or you could just walk away and say, I'm just going to go sit by the fire and read a book for the next 3 months and not think about it. But there are a lot of things you can be doing right now that could really set yourself up for a much more effective growing season next year. And some of that is thinking about what plants are working, what are not. Do I want to move anything around? Autumn is a great time of year to move perennial plants, to divide them if you have the kinds of herbaceous perennials that need to be divided. This is a great time to dig them up and divide them. You can pot some up if you want to give them away to friends or save them to maybe donate to the Master Gardener plant sale for next season. But also in moving plants around this time of year, they're not going to put on a lot of top growth right now, but it's going to give their roots time to reestablish in the soil throughout the winter. So come spring, when they do start to put on top growth, they've got a really nice established root base. So like thinking about those kinds of chores, it's really good to do this time of year. And if you can incorporate thinking about, you know, is my garden really windy? Am I vulnerable to storm damage? And maybe it's time to move that tree or move those plants or replant something else. I think those are really good chores to do right now.
Did you see a lot of destruction out at your place? Did things get lifted up?
And we really didn't. I mean, we did a lot of prep. I think, you know, the warnings that were coming through about this storm, you know, I know a lot of people are kind of, I hate to use the word disappointed, and I think everyone's kind of like embarrassed that they would even be saying this. I'm like, whoa, we did all this prep and then nothing really happened. And, you know, I'm really grateful that nothing really happened. And we did do a lot of prep trying to batten down the hatches. And even then, I was really nervous that a lot of things were vulnerable because you just don't know if the winds that had been predicted had truly hit the rest of the North Coast. I think a lot of our communities would look a lot like Manzanita right now. And that's devastating for them.
Let me give you a little food for thought for us and for the listeners. So we had this semi wake up storm here, did some damage, but couldn't have been so bad. On Thursday, we're going to be participating in the Great Oregon Shakeout. Now, what about our properties in earthquake?
Yeah.
Let's take a walk around our properties for a minute. And what would happen if things really got shook up? Any suggestions about that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a really good thing to think about. I mean, anytime you're thinking about preparedness for storms or disasters, it's a good reminder of that we are vulnerable, that we live in, you know, kind of an interesting landscape that likes to shake around, that we get storms, we get all kinds of impacts to ourselves, to our homes, to our gardens, to our community, and thinking about how prepared are you. And I think it's something that, you know, any homeowner, any renter, any person living in our community needs to think about, you know, what are the things that we can be doing that can help that. And sometimes it's like thinking about, you know, do you have trees that drop a lot of leaves? Are they clogging up drains? Could that cause flooding? Do you need to like be raking your leaves more? Do you need to be cleaning your gutters out? Do you need to be thinking about, you know, if a sudden storm blows in, what's going to happen? If an earthquake happens, what's going to happen? What's your plan? And, you know, you don't want to catastrophize, because I think people get kind of jaded in a sense, when you keep on that heightened alert and then nothing really happens, people kind of think, oh, yeah, it's just another one of those warnings, whatever, it's nothing's going to really happen. And then I just always fear that that's the time we're going to get really slammed. So it's certainly, I've been looking around, I've been walking around our farm and really trying to look at our buildings, look at how we have things set up, look at how we put things away, look at how we secure row covers, look at how our fencing is, look at our trellises. And this is a good time of year to go in and clean all that stuff up. If you've got trellises that might be vulnerable to wind, that are the kinds of things you would pull up and put away, if you have plant supports out, because those are also things that could go flying in a windstorm. And, you know, if you have tarps out on your garden, how much are you securing them down and what are you securing them with? So that, you know, if you get a really big windstorm, is that, you know, big black tarp going to be blowing across the road, you know, hitting someone's car, landing on somebody else's house? I don't know. It's interesting to think about those things. And I think until we're – oftentimes what ends up happening is it's after the fact, after the storm, after the damage, and we're wandering around looking at things going, oh, I really should have pruned that tree. I really should have pruned that tree so it wouldn't have blown over and almost hit my house. So – I think other things, too, I also want to encourage people to think about, I mean, don't just walk away from your garden this time of year. Think about the things that you can be doing now that will help you set you up for the coming year, you know. So, and I was in driving to the studio this morning, I'm seeing all of the maple trees turning and all these beautiful big leaves falling all over the ground, and thinking, that's some amazing compost. That is some amazing mulch right there that's just falling on the ground, and I know a whole bunch of it's going to get raked up and shoved into black plastic bags and thrown away. And I'm thinking, no, rake up all those leaves and use them to mulch your garden with. You know, make a chicken wire around and pack it full of leaves and let it break down over the course of a year. And then you've got some really great mulch for your garden for free.
Yeah.
You know, go around and collect trees from your neighborhood and make your own compost. That's a really good thing to do this time of year.
Yeah.
So, Jane, do you build a compost pile? Do you have one going?
I've got two compost bins that for the first couple of years were just always way too wet.
Mm-hmm.
So I did some modifications, because these are the round bins that you actually turn.
Oh, that you turn. Okay.
That you turn. And they were always way too wet. And then I thought, well, they were commercially made, but there's no reason I can't do some modifying here. So I drilled holes in them.
Oh, to drain the water.
So they drain better.
Oh, that's cool.
So I opened one up just the other night, and I thought, now it's getting too dry. But I hadn't been watching it very much either. So now I've just got to get it going again.
Kate, do you build a compost pile this time of year?
Well, I have moved into a one-bedroom apartment.
So no. So I would say no.
But I will tell you, my wonderful landlords are the owners of Erickson Floral here in Astoria. Wonderful gardeners. And so part of their property is also they're preparing flowers and things that they're using for the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And so because they had the challenge of there's a home, it's a home, it's a yard, it's a landscape, but it's also a quasi, we're preparing these plants for business.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that as far as they're concerned, they are out almost every day walking the place, securing things. When the storm came, it took out the deer fence against the peat. It just ripped it right out of the yard. But I have to say, my landlords are very conscientious about keeping loose things secured and just walking the property,
So. That's a lot of it. I think just getting to know the piece of land, the garden. I mean, whether your garden is like, you know, 10 square feet or, you know, 10,000 square feet or, you know, 100,000 square feet, you know, whatever it is, getting to know your property, getting to know where you live, getting to know your garden or your farm and walking it, seeing how it changes, seeing. And this is a great time of year, I think, to do that. You know, it's cold, it's raining, we don't want to be outside so much, but, you know, just put your rain jacket on, put some boots on, and go outside and walk around and see. Because I think what's great is, as winter comes in, you start to really see the bones of your garden, you see the bones of a property, you start to see the structure of it, you see where the wet spots are, you see where the water wants to go, you see the trees and how their branches are really formed. And there can be some beautiful lessons to learn from that time of year, and to be able to think about how would you want to change things if you want to modify stuff. This is a good time of year to be thinking about that and planning, because the things that you can do now, if you think about there's an area where maybe you want to plant a garden next year, this is a really good time of year to like cover that. Maybe get a load of manure and spread it out over that area and cover it with a big tarp and secure it really, really well so that the wind won't blow it away. But let you know, the worms and the black covering work the soil over the winter and break down the sod or break down what's ever there. And then in the spring, you're going to have a much better situation for getting a garden going there. As if, you know, like in April, if you say, oh, hey, I want to put a garden here. Now I've got to dig up all this sod. I've got to try and turn this into something. You can just be letting that happen while you're inside sitting next to the fire reading a book.
Yeah.
And the worms are doing your tilling for you out there in the soil. So that's something, too, to really be thinking about. You know, are you? Do you have modifications to your garden you're planning, Jane?
Oh, well, yeah, we need a new tree. I mean, from the inside of the house, the old tree provided a window screen.
Uh-huh.
And the light came through those red leaves, and we have a yellow and red house, and provided, I mean, we never had to pull drapes. The tree provided all of that shade. Obviously, I loved it. So, yeah, we're going to have to do that. But I was also just thinking, as you were talking about this, if your garden is boring in the winter,
Yeah.
As you're looking to buy new plants, a speaker for one of the Master Gardener events said when he looks for plants, he wants each plant to provide three things. He wants them to provide fruit, he wants them to flower, and he wants them to be structurally beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And in the winter, if you have a structurally beautiful plant, even if it loses all its leaves, it's still a joy to look at.
I will tell you, one of the most structurally beautiful plants, I think, in the wintertime is red osier dogwood. It is such an amazing plant, and it's a native. It's a Northwest native, and it's this beautiful kind of shrubby plant. It can get quite big, but it has these long stems that come out, and they get covered with leaves, and they flower, and bees like it. And but in the winter, all the leaves fall off, and you're left with these bright red stems. And if you prune it properly, you pretty much can cut it back to nothing. And then in the spring, in the late winter, like new shoots come up, they leaf out, and then all the leaves fall off. And in the wintertime, you're left with this beautiful structure of gorgeous glowing red stems. And that to me seems like an ideal plant. The only downside to me, because I've tried to get it going on our farm, and the deer really like to eat it in my garden. And I've seen it in people's gardens where the deer completely leave it alone, which I think is very unfair. And I've talked to my deer, but they are having none of it, and they keep chewing it to the ground. So I'm determined to try and get this going because it is a really beautiful plant. And even if you're thinking about trees, like if you're going to plant a new tree in front of your house or whatever, think about the structure that it might have in the wintertime with no leaves on it. Or some of the shrubs that we have when they lose their leaves, are they pruned? I've seen some lilacs that are pruned beautifully where they have maybe five branches coming up, and they're just gorgeous in their structure. And so even when there's nothing on them, it's still a really beautiful
gorgeous plant. Yeah.
And those are things that, again, wintertime tells us these things, and we can look at our gardens and I'm also looking at the clock and realizing, oh my goodness, I forgot to say that you're listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, and KTCB Tillamook at 89.5 FM. And we're streaming at coastradio.org, and you can listen on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. Sorry, Kate. I just got so sucked into talking about fall gardening and fall chores.
And we know who we are.
I know.
we know where we are.
The other thing I want to remind people to think about this time of year is that this is a great time of year to be planting bulbs. Spring flowering bulbs. And I am terrible about this. I just forget, and I keep meaning to, like, daffodils and iris and all kinds of things that are so, tulips. If you swing that way and you don't have a deer problem, there's so many things that you could plant right now that are going to give you a glorious floral display in the spring. Yep.
That is so true. And bulbs are one of those things. Well, like anything with gardening, man, you put in about 10%, and then look what you get back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And spring flower bulbs certainly fall into that category.
Absolutely.
And they're really not that hard once you just get in and just do it. It's a fairly straightforward process to get those things in there, and then to see daffodils seeded randomly on hillsides and yards, and
it's so pretty. And things like crocus and snowdrops and grape hyacinth, I mean all those things are great, and daffodils are narcissus. The lovely thing about them is that they are poisonous and deer don't eat them. And so you can get an amazing display. And there are some really gorgeous varieties. It's not just the yellow big trumpet one, although those are pretty in themselves.
Those are fabulous.
But there are some amazing varieties out there. There's fragrant ones. There's ones that are white that have very, very short trumpets, almost a non-existent trumpet. There's so many. I mean, I definitely encourage people to look at some bulb catalogs and think about ordering some. And sometimes they can seem a little bit pricey, but they do multiply over time. Yep. So even if you just start out with four or five bulbs, you know, eventually you're going to have a nice display.
And you can mix them up.
You can,
absolutely. Buy a few cheapies and a few more expensive ones. Uh-huh. Mix them up.
And you can often find them on sale at different places.
Yeah.
And sometimes you find gardeners who are, like, digging them up and have them out in front of their house for sale, you know, for not that much. So look around, ask around. If you see someone with a really great display of fall, you know, spring bulbs, maybe ask if they would share some bulbs with you. Maybe you can trade some plants with them. Because I think those are amazing things to get going. And I love seeing that in the spring. Although I have to say, and I remember this, when we used to live on a farm down in Seaside, there was the most amazing hillside of daffodils that had been planted there. And they were these gorgeous ones that had a double cup. It was almost like they would get these greenish yellow flowers, and it was so beautiful. But I always knew that when they, just as soon as they opened their flowers and started to bloom in February, that the next week there would be hail.
Yes.
And it, without fail, as soon as those bloomed, you knew it would be this glorious weather. They're blooming. You think, oh, all is right with
spring.
The world. And I just knew it was going to hail. And it always did. So I'm not sure why that's true. That's like my own little folklore. When the daffodils bloom, prepare for hail.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, we need to put that on a pillow. We need to work that.
But I feel like it's also one of those things that you got to have to prepare yourself for emotionally. Yeah. And just know that, you know, you savor these things in the moment and enjoy them. But again, there's a lot of things you can do. So don't walk away from your garden right now. Don't just shut the door and not look at it again until March. There's definitely a lot of cleanup you can do. Also doing things like a lot of fall weeding, cleaning up weeds now, not letting them go
component.
To seed. If you have any diseased plant material in your garden, please pull it out. Don't throw it in a compost pile. Dispose of it in the trash or light a bonfire and burn it or something, but just don't put it in your compost pile. But definitely get diseased plants out of your garden. And think about where insects, a lot of the insects you don't like very much overwinter in that weedy, you leave all your plant debris on the ground. They love living in that. Slugs love living in that. Some of those caterpillars that turn into terrible moths love living in that stuff. So,
Teresa, can you talk quickly about then keeping a clean compost pile and what you're talking about now, which is just the dirty disease stuff that gets crudded and mixed in? How do we separate that too, real quick? What are we looking for?
Well, you're looking for plants that might have had things like black spot, aphids, diseased leaves, apple scab, any of that kind of stuff. I mean, and it's hard. A lot of brassica plants, so a lot of sometimes kales, broccolis, Brussels sprouts, things like that. Definitely look at them. If it looks unhealthy, I just err on. Well, I have sort of a second compost pile, which I also call my offering for the deer, and we have a place where I go and dump all of those things. And generally, in a couple of days, the deer have chewed all of it up and composted it for me in a different way. Tomato plants are notorious for that. If you grew any tomatoes or peppers, eggplants, basil, they can often get botrytis, fungal stuff on them, brown rust. And if you put that in your compost pile, you're basically just perpetuating the problem unless you run a really, really hot compost pile, which not many of us do. And I will absolutely confess that I am not that person. I'm a very lazy composter, and so I have to be really careful. Anything that seeds, don't put your weeds in there. If there's things like any of the weeds that have runners, certainly things like morning glory or ivy or anything like that, don't do it. But get out there, do some fall cleanup when it's not raining. Get muddy. I know. Thanks, Kate. Thanks, Jane.
It was great.
I'm just so happy that we all made it through this non-storm event. And again, just my condolences to Manzanita. And please, I know there's some support sites out there that you can donate to help them rebuild. And please check those out and help if you can.